Welcome to SestraCast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean McDonald, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Kathy Campbell. Hey, Kathy, how are you doing?
Hi, Jean. I'm doing great. I'm so excited. I was so good after I watched this episode not texting you multiple things. And I also didn't Google it. So you're welcome, because this was the first time that I really, really wanted to go Google some things.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine.
And I didn't. So you're welcome. You're welcome, audience. You're welcome.
It's hard. It's hard to watch these shows and not want to dig deeper. Now, of course, as in my position on this podcast, as the person who's already watched it multiple times, I'm allowed to Google. So there were a couple of science things that I Googled. I didn't obviously Google plot points, but I can imagine wanting to Google. And I can also imagine just wanting to start episode one of season two right away.
Yeah.
Because this is the episode we're talking about today is the season finale for season one. And it's called Endless Forms Most Beautiful. And it is a cliffhanger of sorts, but it's also very satisfying wrap up of a lot of threads that we've been discussing the whole season of 10 episodes. And overall, Kathy, did you love this episode?
I did. I really agree with what you said about how, even though it's a season finale and yes, it leaves you hanging, it does come to a fulfilling end, which is something that I really like about a season finale. Like, yes, I love the big epic cliffhangers where you don't know if someone's going to die or if they're still alive or like what's happening or any of that. But this was extremely satisfying. It was very fulfilling as an episode by itself, but also as kind of the hat on top of season one. And I just thought it, the way that the episode flowed and the information that was revealed and how it was revealed, you didn't get ahead of the show. It left its plot points. It didn't give too many hints about what was going to happen, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't watch a reveal necessarily that you knew was going to come, which I thought was really, it was just really well done.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And as somebody who's watched it several times, obviously I knew what things were going to be revealed at every point, but I've forgotten until you said it now that the first time I watched it, I had no idea what was going to happen next. And there's a lot of surprises and a lot of adventure and action and heart in this episode.
I agree. And I don't know how much of that is because of my awareness of like my slower brain. Like if there were some things that had enough hints to where it could reveal itself or if it just like was really written that way. So let us know what you think on Twitter if you like saw some of these reveals coming or whatnot, or if it was all fresh to you as much as it was to me.
Yeah, that would be great. Just let us know what you thought of episode 10 of season one on Twitter. We're at SestraCast there, and we'll mention that again at the end of the show. But let's dig into what happened in episode 10. It starts out very dramatically, as usual. There's no episode this season where we said, well, that was kind of ho-hum in the beginning.
Yeah, all epic, especially with the way that the episode before this ended with the reveal of Helena and Sarah having been womb buddies and identical twins, more so than just clones, because we learned that the embryo that was placed in Amelia was ended up splitting. So they are legit twins as well as being clones, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
And Mrs. S kind of plays the, you know, stable mother in this, especially with Helena. And I really like how she said, how Helena takes this will determine what we do with her.
Mm-hmm.
And that just really like solidified the fact that Mrs. S, you know, is the sanity for this, which makes future reveals or hints or things so stressful. But we're not getting there yet.
I just thought, like, S stands for sanity.
Yes. I love it.
S also stands for Sestra.
Yes. Which is, this is where we discover that word.
That's right.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's the first time when Helena is introduced to Amelia. Just to back up a little bit, Sarah's come over to S's house. She's brought Helena, who she had just captured, basically, and had in the trunk. Now she's locked her up in the basement. And at this point, Sarah has met Amelia, and who is their birth mother. And Amelia wants to meet Helena. And Sarah takes Amelia down to the basement to meet Helena. And that's where Helena learns that she and Sarah are twins. And she meets Amelia. And that's when Helena says Sestra, which is the Russian or Ukrainian Slavic word for sister. And that is the word that spawned our podcast, Sestracast.
Yes.
So now you know, in case you were wondering, it's episode 10, first scene.
Which is awesome to finally have that reveal. So because I knew what Sestra meant, but not having the connection with the part in the actual show, it just kind of was like, okay, whatever. Like, yes, because they're clones. Of course they're sisters.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
I liked it.
So while that's going on, Kira comes downstairs and says to Mrs. S she thinks something bad is going to happen, which is definitely...
So scary.
Scary. It's like, okay, if Kira thinks something bad is going to happen, it's going to be really bad.
Well, and it makes me wonder, too, is there some sort of, like, cognition, mm-hmm. special magic that clone children have?
Yeah, I think everybody is wondering that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's right. I think you're meant to think that. The next thing that happens, the police are knocking on the door. It's Art and DeAngelis. We know from last episode, they finally figured out that Sarah Manning is the one who's alive and Beth is dead, and they get an arrest warrant for Sarah. So they come to the door, they come in all SWAT style and, yes. very scary. Sarah runs up the stairs and she's arrested, and Helena's down in the basement. And apparently, again, going to Law and Order clone version, cops don't check the basement when they come to arrest somebody. So,
well, I kind of get it though, because their arrest warrant is just for Sarah.
Yeah.
And so they have Sarah. That's what they're doing. They don't have a search warrant. They don't have any other type of warrant, just the arrest warrant.
Yeah.
So as soon as they have the named person, they're done, basically.
I mean, it does seem a little odd with an entire SWAT team, apparently.
Well, but they also, like, they think there's a chance that she's killed multiple people.
Yeah.
They don't really know about Helena.
No, that's true.
As Helena. So, like, here's this person who has killed multiple people, including witnessed the death of one of their...
That's true.
...cops. So, like, I totally and completely believed the overachievingness of having the entire SWAT team.
Well, no, I agree with that. I just mean, like, if you've got, like, all these people with automatic weapons and body armor, you don't just, like, pop in the basement for a second to make sure nobody's down there, like, ready to shoot you as well. Like, they don't know.
Well, because, I mean, like I said, they have, I don't think it, it was an actual search warrant. I think it's just the arrest warrant. And so once they have the person, like, their warrant is at its limit, so they can't necessarily search the house.
Okay. Well, it's good that they don't, because they would have all been killed.
Yes. Although, like, yeah, because she did escape.
She did, you know? Escape.
She, mm-hmm. she rocked her amazing Helena-ness and pulled the post out of the concrete floor of the basement.
I think
it was concrete. And just kind of...
Yeah,
did her thing.
That was a Helena superpower right there, of Helena just pulling out basically a support of the floor of the house, I think.
Yeah.
So amazing that the house didn't collapse. But so she breaks out of the basement and escapes. That's the beginning. The credits run, and we're back in another exciting and scary at times episode. of Orphan Black. So there's several storylines to follow in this episode, each centered around certain clones, and would be good for us to pick up one of those stories and start taking it to its logical conclusion in this episode, and then see how they all come together at the end.
Yes.
We should start with what's happening with Allison when all this is going on.
Yes, because so we've seen a big character arc for Allison. She has changed so significantly. I think she's probably the biggest change we've seen in any of the clones.
Yes.
Since the beginning of the show. And so she's at her home. So she's not staying at Felix's apartment anymore.
What's she doing?
She's working out. She's got her TV program workout thing going on, and she's exercising, and then the doorbell rings, and I was not expecting it to be Dr. Leakey.
No.
Came out of nowhere. I was just like, that was a surprise, and I was like, okay, what is he doing? Because he's never really been a positive. Like, events haven't ever really unfolded when he's in the scene. And so he presents this kind of a treaty for Allison, who would allow her to be unmonitored and have her freedom, but only if she agreed to double the testing. And immediately I'm just like, yeah, right. Like, this is not, not actually going to happen, because, you know, we've witnessed Dr. Leakey's manipulations before.
Yeah.
We know he's not exactly a solid character.
No.
And additionally, like, he gives Allison exactly what she wants.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does it to everybody. He has he knows these people so well, because I'm sure he gets all of the monitor reports. So he knows everything that they do. And so he knows how to get what he wants from them.
It's so true. One of the points in that dialogue between him and Allison that I really liked is where she says, you know, you must think I'm a complete idiot, you know, just the dumb suburban housewife. And he says, no, I think you're a pragmatic and decisive individual, you know. And that's true, actually, about Allison. She is pragmatic and decisive. So he says something to her that she wants to hear. And just in general, how he is so slippery and smooth with his entreaties. And I think we'll see that in, you know, future scenes with him and the other clones, that I just enjoy that character very much, even though he's a great villain. He's a great villain.
Yes, he is such a great villain, especially since we've seen our previous villains kind of lose their villainness.
Yeah. Like Vic.
Olivier in particular becomes not as scary. And so I'm not sure what's going to happen with Dr. Leakey, but right now, yes, he is the ultimate scary villain.
At least this far in the episode, he's villain number one. I would say that changes, but not to give anything away from the end of the episode.
Spoilers!
Even though everybody's at this point, if you haven't watched this episode, you really don't want to be listening to this podcast right now. So now Allison has a contract, and she does go to Felix's house, apartment, where Sarah and Cosima are, and we'll get to them in a little bit, but they, you know, to talk about the deal that she's been offered by Dr. Leakey, and that she's inclined to take it because what she wants is for her life to go back to normal and to not be monitored and for her kids to be safe. The other clones are all like, yep, you know, that's your choice if that's what you want to do. But Sarah does say, I wouldn't trust anyone.
Right.
Sarah is our touchstone in this. So when she says that, I'm like, so it's not all going to work out really well.
It's not supposed to work out really well. However, no. I was not expecting it to work out.
No.
Particularly this next bit, how it worked out. Because so Allison goes home and she's kind of going through another psycho episode. Not quite as intense. She didn't bring a glue gun.
No.
But she hears, you know, okay, the monitor's being lifted.
Right.
It's already been quote-unquote command that Dr. Leakey told her.
Mm-hmm.
So she gets home and she sees Ainsley's house is for sale. So she's like, well, duh, of course, if the monitor's lifted, they need to move.
Right.
Like, they don't need to be there anymore, so it's perfect.
It makes sense to her.
Yeah, in her crazy mind. And so she goes to confront Ainsley, which, of course, has happened before and was such a successful incident, I guess. I don't know what she was expecting to have revealed.
I think she just wants Ainsley to admit that she was her monitor.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
And that's all she says, you know, is admit it. And Ainsley's like, you know, admit I organized an intervention. You know, sorry that I cared. I love the acting in this scene so much. Ainsley is really good in this scene. And, you know, going back to what we've discussed since episode 6 with Jason Snell on the show, you could look at Ainsley and think, she might just be a normal, you know, high-strung suburban housewife. And her answers to Allison, you know, certainly could be read that way, that she's a meddling friend and no more.
Right.
And Allison's like, well, Dr. Leakey came to see me, and I want the truth. And Ainsley says, the truth is that you screwed my husband, and I'm moving because of it. And then she picks this box of junk, in my opinion, and says, look at all this. Yeah. Gifts from my best friend. And she picks up this very, I wouldn't say a hideous piece of craft work, because I'm sure it looks very nice, but just
very kitschy.
Kitschy, thank you.
It's very kitschy.
Kitschy. A felt Christmas angel. And Allison's like, I made that. She almost gasps, like, oh my God, I made that, and you're gonna destroy it. And Ainsley's right. Like, yeah, to hell with you and your Christmas angel. And she throws it over into the sink. And even at that moment, I'm like, why is she throwing it into the sink?
Right. Why? How is that? And I guess, you know, the house sold for more money. And so she doesn't care necessarily about the health of the garbage right. disposal, right. I guess.
That's true. The house is already sold, so she doesn't have to worry about that. And yeah, she throws it basically into the disposal, and turning it on, she says, you turn this whole thing on me because you're barren and you can't have your own children, which was really a big mistake.
That was such a harsh blow.
Yeah.
Like, it just really dug the knife in, which, you know, let's be honest, Ainsley had, it was legit. Like, it was acceptable low blow because Allison had completely screwed over Ainsley's life.
Yeah.
Like, just completely ruined it.
Yeah.
So she's shoving the angel down the garbage disposal, and somehow her scarf gets caught. And she's trying to pull out of it both ends of the scarf. And so she's getting sucked into the garbage disposal, and she's trying to ask for help because she can't reach the switch. And Allison goes over and starts to push the button and doesn't, and watches Ainsley choke to death
yep.
in her own sink. I kept waiting for either the button to be pushed or her to get out of the scarf or something, mm-hmm. and it didn't happen. And I was just like, oh my goodness, that actually just happened. We just saw Allison not... I would say maybe not quite manslaughter.
I don't know what it would fall under, but it certainly wasn't good.
No.
You know, and she taps on Allison's shoulder. She can't believe. I think she's in shock. That's part of it. But she definitely consciously pauses and doesn't press the button. So it's not like she completely lost it and didn't know what to do and froze.
Right.
Which would be more understandable and, dare I say, more forgivable. When Allison realizes that Ainsley is dead, she basically hightails it out of the kitchen through the garage, and then she stops and she turns around and she like sort of tiptoes back to
wipes off her fingerprints. She's very aware.
That's the point where you're like, okay, Allison, you know, this, we like you a lot, but our love for Allison is going to always be overshadowed, but there's always going to be this little lining of like, whoa, that's pretty scary that she could do that. That's a Helena move.
Right. Or, you know, I could even see maybe not Sarah, like with the not saving from the scarf, but I could see Sarah letting someone that she considered an enemy die.
Yeah.
Without necessarily like doing what she could have done to help them.
Right.
But it was still, it was hardcore.
So yeah, so Allison gets out of there. Later we see her clipping coupons, so.
Yeah, with her glass of wine.
Yeah, with her glass of wine, right? And she steps out of the house to check the mail. Actually, at that point, that's Art and DeAngelis are there. They're staking out her house because they got a tip from Vic. They tracked down Vic, which is a whole nother little story. And DeAngelis says, that isn't Sarah Manning, is it? And Art's like, no, that is another person entirely.
Yeah. So DeAngelis and Art are watching Allison's house.
Yeah.
Because they think that it might have been Sarah Manning, but obviously it's not, because we'll talk about what happened with Sarah before. Yeah. But like the stages of the story are definitely the foundation of this plot line are totally coming together. Mm-hmm. People are discovering that there's multiples. Mm-hmm. And you can tell when Allison goes out to quote unquote check the mail, she's really just checking to see if someone's found Ainsley's body.
Right.
Like trying to be as casual as possible. Mm-hmm. To see what happens. And then later on, Donnie comes home.
Yeah. We haven't seen him for a while.
And Allison is having a panic attack. Yeah. Which, understandably, since she pretty much killed somebody. Like, she's having a major reaction.
I'm a horrible person, which you can't really disagree with that point.
Right.
But Donnie doesn't know, obviously, what she's upset about. He thinks she's upset about the intervention and about the screwing her neighbor's husband. And Donnie is in this extreme, you know, reconcile mode, I would say.
Right.
Where he's like, no, it's me. I let those people in our home. They had no right to intervention you, which I like the use of intervention as a verb.
Yes.
And then there's a great Allison expletive, which is not an expletive at all, but she's like, Judas Priest, what have I done?
Yes. I loved that.
Yeah.
It was so Allison.
And that's another thread on the Clone Club on Facebook, is like your favorite Allison, you know, curses, and Judas Priest right down as one of them. And Donnie's like, we can put everything behind us. And she's like, really? Because she really wants to, obviously. She wants everything to be over. So the next time we see Allison, she's signing the papers that Leakey gave. And she is, I mean, it doesn't really matter, but since we're both tech people, I was like, is she e-faxing them? Or is she making PDFs and emailing them?
I'm pretty sure she's making a PDF for the record based on the visual of when it arrives. Yeah. At the location, but that doesn't matter.
Then she looks out the window and sees emergency vehicles across the street, and Donnie's like, what's going on? And Allison says, none of our business. Since this is they're turning over a new leaf, supposedly, plus obviously.
Right.
And Donnie is actually suited up in a tracksuit, and he says, I'm going out for a jog. I've become a lump, and you deserve better. And that's the end of that scene. And I think we can put a pin in Allison's thread right here.
All right.
Because there's a little bit more to go, and it really ties in with the end with all the other clones. And
yep.
Well, what should we pick up next?
Shall we do Cosima?
Yes, Cosima. Well, love Cosima. She's on a bus and she's arriving in the city. And she steps off the bus and she coughs up blood in her hand. And that's the first time, I think, where we get the signal that Cosima is actually sick.
She's got the same thing that the Russian has.
The German, but yes.
The German, yep. Yes.
That's okay.
I still cannot reconcile the fact that Katya is German and not Russian. like, it just doesn't click in my head for some strange reason. I don't know why.
Obregon is a pretty German name compared to Russian. Yes. So just, and don't forget the German version of these boots are made for walking is what they play.
Right.
For that
yes.
character in episode 2.
It still won't matter. I will still continue to call her Russian in my head as much as I try so hard.
Yeah.
But yes, the German. Katya is sick.
Katya is sick, like the German.
Was sick before she got shot in the head. And so Cosima has the same respiratory disease that mm-hmm. Cosima has been talking about for a while for the research that she was doing.
And as she steps out onto the sidewalk, there's a big black car, and it's Dr. Leakey. He says, come on, you know, let me at least give you a ride into the city, and I have something that I think will be of interest to you. And he has a contract for her, too. But it's a different contract than Allison's. It's a job offer.
Because obviously what would work with Allison would not work with Cosima.
Yeah. He's almost like the Wizard of Oz, right?
Yes. Or like a fixer. He knows these people, and he knows what makes them tick, and he knows what will trigger their excitement.
So the thing that will trigger Cosima is to hand her a hard drive.
Right.
And say, here's your complete genome on it.
Oh, and by the way, here's an employment contract to work for the Dyad Institute, which we know that you would want to do. And it will basically be a lot of money to just do what she's been trying to do anyways.
So that's when Cosima goes over to Felix's house, and that's where we're having this clone roundup talking about the offers that they are getting from Dr. Leakey.
And I really liked the beginning of the scene when Cosima arrives and she apologizes to Sarah.
Yes, that's a nice scene.
You know, they're both very proud people. Mm-hmm. And Cosima really let down her guard in order to apologize the way that she did.
Yeah, and specifically, she apologized for ignoring all of Sarah's instructions about Delphine, and she says, oh, I so should have listened to you about Delphine. And they hug, and I think that might be the first time they were actually hugged.
Sarah's very much a non-touchy person.
Right. They talk a little bit about the contractor at Felix's house, and Sarah's leaving and Allison's leaving, and Cosima's hanging out with Felix, and she gets a text from Delphine, who's also just come into town. And I would say my only complaint about this episode is there's not enough Felix in it.
I agree. There were so many opportunities for Felix to be a part of this.
Yeah. But I mean, the parts that he did have were good. And in that one moment when Cosima says that Delphine is texted, he says, oh, that clingy, needy bitch, you know. And that's when Sarah says, well, she wants to help, just like Art, Paul. You know, but we make our own decisions, and I wouldn't trust anyone. So Delphine shows up at Felix's house, and I mean, right before that, Cosima's coughing up blood again. I guess they want to make sure that we know that Cosima is really sick. So it wasn't just a fluke. And Felix answers, it's Delphine. And I want to say in this scene, I just love the music. They've got this like very sexy, romantic French, you know, ballad playing, you know, like a chanson, like, I don't know, not Edith Piaf specifically, but something like that. And Felix slides back his door, and there's Delphine, you know, towering over him, of course, as she does. And Felix gets his one good line, which is like, oh, now I get it.
And then she goes, it's Delphine. She's got baggage.
I know. That was a great line, too. She's got baggage.
Yeah. I love Felix so much.
I love Felix. And yeah, and then he does get to say also, if Sarah were here, she'd kick your willowy ass.
Yes.
And I had to actually turn on the subtitles to make sure I got that word willowy, because I wasn't sure what he said. So Felix takes off, leaving Delphine and Cosima alone. And Delphine is there, you know, she's like, Leakey is a liar, and you can prove it with that, you know, genome sequence that he gave you. Cosima says, you know, well, he gave me the whole thing. And she says, Delphine says, but you can't find that sequence anymore. And that's a reference back to when they first, like, decoded Scott, like, decoded the sequence, I guess, of one of the clones, and there was a part of it that they couldn't read that was encoded, the barcode part.
Yeah.
Delphine is like, well, Leaky will have scrubbed it. And that just pisses Cosima, you know, off, and she smashes her computer to the floor, and Delphine tries to, you know, comfort her, put her hand on her shoulder, and Cosima's like, don't touch me.
Yeah, she's still pissed.
Because now she's sick, too. So she knows time is running out for her, and Delphine says, I'm on your side now. You know, please believe me. You have to trust someone. And Cosima says, I think that sequence is a message, and it's a key to our origin. And then the two of them start working together, and which is a fun scene just to watch them do their crazy science together. There's science. I did look that. I mean, I could quote all these things they said about nucleotides and encrypted ID tags.
The history of encryption all of that.
Eventually, so I'm going to put a link in the show notes. I did get a good, what I thought was a pretty good concise article about nucleotides and DNA and base pairs and what that all really means. But it helped me a lot because I'm not a geneticist. I never even studied this level of genetics. So I didn't know, because they were looking at this sequence of nucleotides, and Cosima said, well, there's G, C, A, and T, you know, and they think there's four that they have to decode. But then they think about, well, 30 years ago, they were not encoding in this complex level that we do today. They were using ASCII, ones and zeros. And the pair, it's their base pairs. So G and C and A and T, they all stand for certain chemical, you know, components of DNA. And G and C are always paired, and A and T are always paired, just FYI. That's not, it's not as random as it sounds. So anyway, Cosima starts keying in ones and zeros. And I think we put a pin in this right now, because what they find out is how the whole ending comes together.
It's a big deal.
So there's a lot of nice Cosima-Delphine interactions. And again, I can report from Clone Club that Cosima and Delphine are probably the most popular characters in terms of how much people love them and love their interactions, so
which is nice to see.
So now we want to talk about what happens with Sarah.
Yes.
After she's been arrested, right?
Yes. So she's in an interrogation room, and it's really surprising that Art is the one that gets to interrogate her.
Right.
But I guess he fought for it, you know? And he's trying to get the truth. He's trying to figure out what really happened. And Sarah goes, you wouldn't believe it. And Art goes, try me, which is like exactly what they would say.
Mm-hmm.
There's a small flash because Art tells Sarah that her brother's in custody too. And so we get to see that last little bit of Felix for the episode is with him talking to DeAngelis and trying to flirt with her.
Yeah.
And he's all, you really need to get laid. And she's like, yeah, tell me about it. But all I seem to meet are gay men. And he's just like, oh, she caught me out. Like, really? You think you could, like, pass as a straight dude? Like,
oh, yeah, interesting.
Okay. It was a good try. Yeah. So Sarah is going to reveal to Art the truth, except income, these suits, these big, important, like, people to steal Sarah away, saying he's, you know, I'm her lawyer and she's not talking to you anymore, blah, blah, blah. But you know something's off. Like, you're just triggered because, like, this is not, like, she doesn't have a lawyer.
Right. Where would a lawyer like him come from? Especially a lawyer who's a Cylon from Battlestar Galactica. He has to be evil.
Yes. That must have been what really triggered my brain to know that this was not, this is not safety.
Yeah, that actor. Oh, I wish, I don't have his name, but the character, Daniel Rosen, and you look at him and you're like, oh my God, he's a robot.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I thought that was really, really interesting. So he steals her away and they go to a big high-rise building. And who is in the big fancy elevator but our friend Paul?
Oh, yeah.
Who we hadn't heard from in a while.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of seems random, honestly, that he just appears then. But he basically says, like, when Sarah didn't show up to hand over Helena to Dr. Leakey, Paul had to, like, kind of hitch his wagon to Dyad so that he could at least help Sarah from the inside. He didn't, I mean, I could sort of believe that he didn't know what he should do next. And
yeah,
he says, you know, that Sarah should look at what they have to offer. So yeah, she walks into the big empty office floor. I mean, it's like a floor through office.
Like all there is a floor, like one of those really fancy buildings that they have so much space that they can just sit and do whatever they need to or want to. She walks into this big, epic, just a floor that has a single desk in the corner. And she walks up to the table and you see that it's the back of the lady that was talking to Dr. Leakey and was talking about how blood is thicker than water, which I was like, oh, it sounds like Tatiana Maslany. I can never pronounce her last name.
Maslany.
Maslany. It sounds like it's Tatiana Maslany, but there's no reveal. So when Sarah is walking up to this desk and the lady that we had seen the back of at the end of the last episode turns around and you see that it's Tatiana, you're like, aha, I was correct. Like I had a little bit of a moment there. Mm-hmm. I was very excited that I recognized the voice. And she's very put together. You can tell that she is important to the Neolutionists and the Dyad Institute and whatever group is the umbrella corporation, mm-hmm. I guess. And she provides the treaty / contract / negotiation idea to Sarah, whereas Dr. Leakey was the one that did the others.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really interesting choice.
Right. And when she's revealed, I mean, she gives her name and she says one of her famous lines, honestly, which is, "My name is Rachel Duncan and we are going to come to terms." And it's like,
yes,
the most vicious sounding like legal agreement, introduction of a legal agreement. It's like, we are coming to terms. And I can't possibly do her accent justice because she also has a British accent, but it's a much more posh accent than
yes.
Sarah's and you know, and Felix's. So she's meant to be, you know, seen as like the sleek, polished, high class, but still a clone. And honestly, you know, until Rachel is revealed, I had the hardest time imagining that Helena was still Tatiana Maslany. But Rachel is really hard, and it's for me, even though she obviously without the fluffy Helena hair, I mean, she has a regular, very, you know, sleek haircut. She looks like Tatiana Maslany, but she acts so different. It's really hard to keep them in mind.
I find that really interesting because I have a harder time remembering that Cosima is Tatiana than I do. Like Rachel, I could totally see it. I could tell. I was very aware. But sometimes with Cosima, I have a forgetfulness that she's Tatiana.
That's interesting. I do know I read somewhere in a you know, article, Entertainment Weekly type article, that's the one clone when she's filming that she doesn't have outside people on the set for.
For Rachel or Cosima?
For Rachel, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I think because Rachel is, the character is so different, you know, and so brutal.
Right. Well, and we learn, so Helena is kind of the child of the Prolethians.
Yeah.
And we learn that Rachel is the child of the Neolutionists.
Right.
She's the pro-clone, as Felix calls her. And she's here to help Sarah transition to self-awareness now that they know they're clones. They know they're, you know, some form of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the truth would be revealed, supposedly, in the contract. And Rachel gives her 24 hours to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is when she goes back and joins Cosima and Allison at Felix's. And they're talking about now all three of the contracts.
Yeah.
After this whole discussion of contracts, you can tell that Sarah is scared. I mean, she's just frightened for Kira.
Mm-hmm.
Because she knows that they want Kira.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is, and she will do whatever it takes to protect Kira. So she's going, she goes back to Mrs. S's house and is packing clothes and is telling Kira not to tell anybody, not even Mrs. S, and goes downstairs to get ready to leave for the night. And Mrs. S is sitting in the chair with her shotgun.
Yeah.
Like, just hanging out.
Yeah. Well, she says, like, you know, I'm nervous because Helena is in the wind. And that's, like, her,
yes,
her, you know, former resistance underground fighter instincts, you know, kicking in that they could be ambushed. She asks Sarah, where are you off to? And Sarah says, oh, I'm meeting Amelia. You all right? And S says, like, mind Amelia. She didn't raise you. And Sarah's like, yeah, you did. And I thought about that a little more, and I realized, because I was like, why the fact that she didn't raise you should matter. But I think that what she means is, like, she doesn't have your best interests at heart, necessarily.
Right. But, and I think also, too, Mrs. S knows how much Sarah wanted to know her birth mother.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is something that a lot of fostered and adopted children have, is they want to know who gave birth to them. And so all of this build up to where she finally knows who her birth mother is, like, Mrs. S is almost jealous of Amelia.
Mm-hmm.
And the connection that she immediately had. And then additionally, we also see a little bit more as to why she might be nervous further down the line.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, she's just like, I got to protect my babies, basically.
Right.
And she'll do whatever it takes to protect her babies.
Right.
However old they might be.
Her chickens.
Yes.
Yeah, so the next thing you see is Amelia knocking on the door at Beth's apartment. And earlier on, like in the first scene, Amelia had said to Sarah, look, I need to talk to you alone. There's some things you need to know. Where could we meet? And Sarah says, oh, I have a place. And apparently she gave her Beth's address. So Amelia's knocking on the door of Beth's. And the door opens and she's like, thank you for seeing me, Sarah. You know the scene I'm talking about now. So I kind of
want you
to tell it, because I knew what was happening. When did you know what was happening?
I didn't know until she said, how did the doctors put the babies in you?
Okay.
Or whatever that line was. That was that. I didn't realize that, because you see her leaving,
mm-hmm,
and you expect it to be Sarah.
Right.
And it's most definitely not.
Yeah. First, when that character, which, you know, turns out to be Helena impersonating Sarah, and that's what I was wondering, is like, did you see that right away? Because, of course, I was looking for clues once, now I know what was happening.
Yeah.
And I don't remember, like, did I realize it? Because she says, it's very similar to that scene in the police precinct where Helena pretended to be Beth. With the hat over her head. Really weird scene where she says just enough. The only word she says, I think, is drink, you know, like question mark, like drink. But you couldn't really hear enough to hear her accent. And Amelia says, like, well, no, just water. And then starts talking about Helena and saying, oh, that poor child. Helena, you two are different as night and day. And, They're sitting across from each other, and Amelia says, again, you know, I have to warn you, Mrs. S is not who she says she is. And that point, so you didn't know that it was Helena until,
because
the next line is where Sarah would have said, like, what do you mean? Helena says, like,
right.
How did they put babies inside you?
Yes. And I was just floored.
Okay.
I was just completely did not see it coming, which, like, again, I don't know if that's my own whatever my brain works, but, like, you had seen her leave and she was going to meet Amelia. So, of course, it was going to be Sarah and Amelia. Mm-hmm. And I was really stressed for Amelia mm-hmm. at that point.
Rightfully so.
There was a lot of blood already. And Helena says, you gave me to them. You let them make me this way.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart was breaking for Helena because
mm-hmm.
here's her birth mom who, like, didn't protect her.
Right.
You know, who didn't do what Helena's imagination of what family is mm-hmm. should have mm-hmm. done.
She stabbed Amelia. I don't think we mentioned that. Like, stabbed and twisted the knife, right, in her abdomen, I guess.
Like, hardcore. There was a lot of blood.
There was a ton of blood. And then the next scene, Sarah is coming into the apartment, you know, sees the blood and the wig right away, and the phone rings, and Sarah's like, what have you done, Helena? And Helena's like, we missed you, sister. Come join us. And so that leads us to the scene where Sarah goes back to Helena's freighter of hell.
Yes.
I mean, what a hellish set. It really was.
It's so spooky and just oppressive and overwhelming and emotional and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that makes it worse is all of the blood on the ground. And then you see Amelia tied up against a post, and you're just like, my first thought was, oh, thank goodness she's still alive,
mm-hmm.
because I thought that she would be dead.
Yeah, I did too. I think she should have been dead, actually. Literally, you know.
No, it's true.
Realistically speaking.
That was a lot of blood. a lot of blood.
But she had to stay alive so that Sarah could find her dying. And, you know, Amelia's trying to tell her what she wants to tell her. But all that she manages to do is give her the photo of the two professors. So it's an old photo. It looks like a photo from the 70s. And there on the back is a label with the names are redacted out, but it says, like, professors blank and blank from the Lita Project. And that, I mean, that's all she gets out of her, right?
Yeah. And also, this is the same photo that Mrs. S found when she was digging through Amelia's luggage
right.
earlier in the episode.
Right.
Which she put back. Is the other professor, like, is the female professor Mrs. S? I'm not good enough with faces. Mm-hmm. I couldn't recognize her. So I'm wondering if, yes, she is, or at least was at some point. And you're just totally not going to say anything. And it's going to drive me absolutely crazy because I love Mrs. S so much and I don't want her to be a bad guy. And I will cry so hard if she is a bad guy. Like, and my entire everything of this character is ruined, which I really hope is not true and is, in fact, just a bluff. And that, you know, Amelia's dead, so you can't ask her any questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing that in the next season, there will be a confrontation and we'll learn some truth. Probably not all of the truth, but this was the part that I had to try very hard not to Google because Mrs. S and Felix might be my two favorite characters
yeah.
and don't make me choose between them. But find, yeah, the hint that Mrs. S might not be all good mommy
mm-hmm.
is bad.
I can tell you when, you know, I saw this episode the first time, the photo is very blurry and not clear. I didn't know who it was looking at it. I don't know if I was supposed to know who it was, but I didn't know who it was. And I just went by the label on the back of, like, well, we know it's supposed to be, obviously, you know, not just any two random scientists, but probably
right.
two evil cloning scientists.
Yes. And the fact that it's in relation to Amelia commenting on Mrs. S not being who she says she is and shows that But then again, it is the same picture that Mrs. S found in the luggage and left there. So I'm torn.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And we'll just have to wait and see. Because if Mrs. S thought it was bad, mm-hmm. I guess, she would have, like, not let the picture be there. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
That's interesting.
That's what I'm holding on to, that lifeline.
So, well, back to the freighter of hell.
Yes.
So at this point, it's just Sarah and Amelia talking, and Amelia dies at that point. You know, she gives her the photo and she dies. And then Helena turns up. She's coming down some stairs. She's got a flare in her hand. It's like, could she be more, you know, satanic looking?
And yes, it was so evil right then. Like, just the whole essence of evil was showing.
Yeah, and her first words are "moi sestra," which is my sister in Ukrainian. You know, my twin mother isn't feeling very well. It's like, wow. She's,
oh my gosh.
It's about the evilest she ever sees, you know.
Yeah.
Which is saying a lot. And Sarah's like, she's dead, you psycho. You killed somebody I've dreamed of my whole life. And I think this is the most, like, sad and emotional I've seen Sarah be, other than like for something involving Kira.
Right.
And she certainly has always put up a pretty tough exterior to Helena, and she, you know, she's there, she's, you know, she's in tears. But Helena's saying, hey, she separated us, she tore us apart, and now we are together. Sarah's says, you're nothing to me, you're just a crazy bitch wearing my t-shirt. And Helena looks down, she looks at the t-shirt, which, and she says, London calling. And
then headbutts her.
Headbutts her out of the, that was surprising, even again, like, just scary. And then she gets some chains and is choking Sarah from behind. And I just want to point out, like, this is one of those scenes when you watch it, it's important to remember how they shot it. Because
yes,
it's basically Tatiana Maslany, you know, battling herself.
Right.
And it's not like two clones across a desk from each other. They're like right next to each other, Helena and Sarah. And we should give, you know, recognition and props to the actress who worked with Tatiana Maslany as her double for all of these scenes.
Yeah.
And her name's Catherine Alexandri. And, you know, she also had to play all these clones. She does all the scenes from both sides, you know, and has to do them, you know, in such a way that gives Tatiana Maslany somebody, you know, to act with and, you know, to have reactions against. And
right.
So I rewatched that, like, the fight sequence, I rewatched it a couple of times, just like thinking about how amazing it is that two people have this talent to make this work.
Yes. I really like that scene in particular, but also when all three of them are together and Allison pours Cosima wine.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, oh, look at that. That's so cool. Like, I was really impressed with that as well. And then again, when the fight scene happens, it's just, oof, it's amazing. It's just incredible. Once again, in awe of the entire team,
mm-hmm.
and what they've done.
Because
mm-hmm. it's so seamless.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so well done.
Yeah. So they, you know, Helena is saying, you know, scientists make one baby, we split into two, so I can't kill you, sister, like you cannot kill me. But Sarah pulls a gun on her, and Helena says, this is one of her signature phrases too, we make a family, yes. And Sarah says, I've already got a family, and shoots her.
Yeah, which it was shocking, especially because she, like, falls down and is not breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, oh my gosh, she's actually dead? Question mark. Then, of course, we'll find out in the next season if she is actually dead or somehow gets saved. because you never know at this time.
Yeah, it's not like you can look up and say, oh, well, Tatiana Maslany is in season two, so she must be still alive. Whoa, no.
Not that I could look up anyways, because I'm not allowing myself to do that.
No, you can't. In fact, you know, they give Tatiana credit for every clone in IMDb, like each character. It's not like they say Tatiana Maslany plays Rachel, Sarah, blah, blah. They're right. Separate credits for each character, which is totally deserved. So Sarah then calls Rachel and says, just promise me my daughter won't have to live like this. And Rachel says, rather coldly and, of course, completely unbelievably, we can do that. You know, like Sarah just asked her for some, like, change in the terms to a contract. Like, can we make it for 12 months or something? Really
right.
Simple. Yeah, we can do that. And Sarah says she's coming in. So Sarah's on her way now to Dyad. And this is where the show just, like, blow after blow, scene after scene is just, like, you know, dragging you to the conclusion, which is exciting and shocking and satisfying all at once. So how do we tackle this, Kathy?
Sarah's going to head in to sign up, yeah. Sign the contract.
It's like a gym membership.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a gym membership. It's like you can never get out of it.
Right. No, totally. So it's flipping back and forth at this point where we are cut scenes between a variety of people. We're cutting back to Cosima doing it with Delphine, the science, and what she discovers as she translates the code is that the code is a patent. Like, as science experiments, these human beings are patented, their property. And so there is no freedom. Like, there's no way this could happen. Sarah hangs up with Rachel and heads to the big building that she was at. And she meets Paul in the elevator. And apparently it's a really slow elevator because there's multiple long conversations that are able to be had. But we learn more about what Paul is nervous about being discovered. In Afghanistan, he shot and killed 6 Marines and covered it up. And so that is what Dr. Leakey has over him. So there's a lot of flashing back and forth between the different mm-hmm. characters. And we learn that Cosima has cracked the code. And she calls Sarah and is like, you can't do this. The freedom is a lie. It's a patent. We're property. So basically, these human beings are owned by the Dyad Institute or whoever.
Right. And it's a really dramatic moment for a computer screen. Because basically you see ones and zeros, and then suddenly, you know, it starts this terminal, like, you know, command line starts typing out, you know, this biological organism is the property of Dyad Institute or whatever. And it's this organism and any derivatives. So
right.
That means Kira.
Kira as well, which is so, I mean, that's ultimately the switch.
Yeah.
The elevator comes up and the door is open and they're not there.
Cylon is there.
Paul and Sarah have disappeared from the elevator.
Right.
And Rachel calls someone, we don't know who, and says, you know what to do.
Wait a second. You skipped a very important piece, which is Rachel looks at her computer, gets a message, and it says, from Sarah, and it says, up yours, pro clone.
Yes. Oh, I did forget about that.
Well, that's a great line. Up yours, pro clone.
Oh, it was so great, because especially the email and the signature in the email that was like sent from my phone, like whatever phone. It was very,
yeah, that was weird. Yeah,
that was very odd.
Yeah, it didn't seem very high tech.
No.
So yeah, and then she makes the call. As you say, we don't know who she's calling, but of course she must have millions of evil henchmen. And
oh,
she
yes.
says, you know what to do. In fact, she's very much like an evil queen from a Disney film.
Yeah.
Now that I think about
very
it,
very Maleficent.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Wicked Witch of the West sending off her flying monkeys.
Oh, God, yes. So there's just two little scenes left. We go back to the Hendrix house.
Yes.
But not to Allison, but Donnie. And Donnie is leaving the house on his jog, and he jogs just down a few houses, big exercise for him. And
right.
There's a limo, and he hops into it, and there is Dr. Leakey again. And how did you feel when that scene happened?
Oh, my gosh. I am super impressed with Donnie's acting skills. Not the character, because, of course, the character is great. But, like, Donnie, because I believed that he was not the monitor.
Mm-hmm.
I legit, like, I wasn't 100% sure that it was Ainsley. But I was like, oh, it can't be Donnie. Like, but no, it was. So that, I mean, the amount of planning that was taken to get Donnie as what, like a teenager, mm-hmm. early 20s, mm-hmm. into Allison's like way to become the monitor, like, oh, it's hardcore.
Yeah.
I was shocked.
Yeah, he says, we're back on track. It's just the worst feeling, even though obviously I knew that was going to happen, and I know a lot more about that whole situation. At that moment, even watching it now, it's like depressing to me, because he's just been so like nice and warm, and he's going to be the great supportive husband, and boom.
Right. You were like, oh, yay, he's got this.
It's like the one thing she cares about more than anything else, honestly. I mean, obviously she cares about her kids, but that's very abstract because we hardly ever see the kids. But she killed her woman she thought was her monitor.
Only to discover, well, and she hasn't discovered it yet, but we know now that it was not the monitor. And it's just like, oh my goodness. Yeah, it was heartbreaking.
And it's such, like I said, it's like a really short scene, about 1 minute there. And he says, and she's difficult, you know, it's difficult. She's difficult. And I thought, what? You just like said all these nice things to her, and now you're bad mouthing her to the evil Dr.
Yeah,
Leakey.
It just goes to show again the level of acting that Donnie has, mm-hmm. to be able to say those things that she needed to hear.
Mm-hmm.
It was well done.
Yep.
Well done on that.
Yeah.
Whole shebang. Like, wow.
Yeah. And then the final scene is Sarah coming back to Mrs. S's house, because, of course, she's going to pick up Kira and take off. She's already planned for this. And when she walks into the house, that she can see it's been ransacked and nobody seems to be there. She's yelling for Mrs. S and for Kira and up to Kira's bedroom. Nobody is there. And she's looking out the window, which is open. It's a really great, you know, final scene, as it should be. And, you know, they show her face out the window, and she's yelling, Kira. And that's the end. Fade to black.
Yeah. But again, I mean, we have these resolutions in other bits of the show. I mean, with Donnie and Cosima and Delphine reconcile, and you learn a little bit more about Paul and just all of these things. And then that cliffhanger, it's like, it's scary. Don't get me wrong. Like, I want to know what happens to Kira, but I'm okay with this being the end of a season.
Yeah.
Like, it was enough to not want to yell and scream and throw something at the TV.
Wow. I think this was a great season.
Our Twitter handle is @SesterCast. You can follow either of us. Jean is @MacGeanie, and I am @MrsSoup. We would love to hear what you thought about the whole season. If this is your first walkthrough, what you thought of the reveals as well, or if you've seen it many times, if you were surprised like Jean was at certain parts that you had forgotten how that happened. Let us know what you think. We are so happy to be a part of the Incomparable Network, and we hope you check out some of the other shows as well. So we hope you enjoyed season one, and we look forward to having you join us for the next season.
Yeah, thanks a lot for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Bye, guys.